This Digital Free Thought Radio Hour was originally broadcast on the 4th of October, 2017.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo.
And welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Live show with Doubter 5, and on the phone we have, as usual, Wombat. It's a radio show, a radio talk radio show. I'll get it right in a second. About atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanisms, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. You might get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, or the Bible Belt for that matter. Well, that's just not true. There are several atheist and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them later on right here on the show. Also, that's right. Also, did you know that there's an atheist call-in television show broadcasting right here in Knoxville? And it's been broadcasting for over 7 years. Did you know that, Wombat?
Home today. But then they get on the magic school bus, and then they shrink down, and they go in people's noses and stuff like that. Man, that's my childhood. I love it. That's the whole reason why I got into science anyway. I'm really hopeful that the new remake is pretty good. I've seen it. I'm not impressed with the trailers that they're showing for it.
Well,
I got my fingers crossed.
I'm glad you like that show, but it's not this show. The atheist call-in television show that has been broadcasting here in Knoxville for 7 years is called Free Thought Forum, and it's on Community Access TV, and it has nothing like that, just a couple guys in front of the camera talking about stuff and answering questions that people call in with. But anyway, we'll tell you how you can watch that later on in the show too, so stick around. Also, in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs, and you'll hear some of them right here on this program and generally on this station as they are in rotation. Now, what are we going to do with our topic tonight? I think you've been mulling one around today, haven't you there, Wombat?
Womp, womp, womp. I was thinking about my days in college. They almost feel so far away that they could be in black and white. Let's go with a sepia tone. Back into the past. Playing the going into the past time machines, the sound effect sound. I was a young, precocious little child.
No,
I can tell you something.
Say it ain't so.
As young as I was for the woke, this was first year grad school, even before I was officially an atheist. At that time, I was still an active believer to a point in God. I was beginning to have my doubts. I was beginning to cut out certain parts of the Bible that just didn't appeal to me, and read other parts of the Bible that I could still feel some sort of spiritual fulfillment from. And I remember the first year of grad school, there was a bunch of boots going on. You had every kind of fraternity and sorority out there trying to advertise themselves. You had black historical groups going out there. You had groups that were just like the math club, science club, geek club, whatever you want. We also had this one booth that I thought was particularly interesting. And the name of this booth, well, actually, the booth had a book, just a book in front of a black background, and the book was called The God Delusion. And I thought, oh, I know this book. It's like that Charles Hitchinson's book. I don't really know all of the atheist things, but yeah. I don't really know what's going on. But I also saw a really interesting piece of text right behind the book on a giant poster, and it was called The God Test. And I thought to myself, I don't know who these people are about. I'm kind of freaked out because if they're trying to be, if they're dirty atheists, I don't want them to tempt my soul in a different, in a dangerous place because I know I'm not one of those people.
Uh-huh.
And so I never took the opportunity to take the test. But, you know, after a large period of personal growth, where I finally was able to come to terms with why I fell out of my religion and why I was actually better off to do so and why I need to have good reasons to believe in things, I looked on the internet and I found other people who are, you know, pretty relevant atheists or ones that I follow on YouTube going to take the God test or being approached by people on college campuses to take the God test.
The God
turns
test.
Out,
what is this God test thing? Where did you find that?
Yeah, so it turns out the God test is not a part of atheist propaganda, even though it might, it could be seen as something that's kind of discerning when you first look at it.
Mm-hmm.
It is, in fact, a set of 10 questions, just 10 questions, typically issued to you by a very handsome college person.
No.
They seem to get the most prettiest people or handsome people to issue the test.
Mm-hmm.
But the premise of the test is to gauge your faith and, unfortunately, kind of insert a sense of doubt that leads you to God.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be a potentially dangerous thing in my case. If I had gone to them in my mindset when I was in my first year of grad school, because I would have been easily persuaded by them into whatever their ulterior motive was, which was to get me back into faith.
Yeah.
Hold on, my cat's eating my food back.
Uh-huh.
So here's the thing. The premise of the test is to give you doubt and get you back into the world of faith.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know how to answer the questions appropriately, you can avoid doing that. And then maybe have a very smart conversation or an alternative conversation with people who try to issue that test in the future. So what do you think about the God test?
Well, I'll throw something out there very first thing. As you see them approaching college students and other students, you know, high school students, college students, you don't see them approaching college professors. You don't see them approaching biblical scholars. You know, there's one in Knoxville, Joe Barnhart, who is a professor of religion and philosophy, and he's an atheist. They don't want to get people who can answer those questions. They want to get people who are not educated in the apologetics of Christian and atheism. So they go for the young, they go for the vulnerable, as they always have, as religion always has. And I'd be more than happy to jump in myself. I'm not a student, except a student of life. I'm 67 years old, and I've been around, and I've been an atheist for 45 years. So I'd be more than happy to talk about any of these questions that you want to bring up.
Sure. And so if anyone's listening
About listening in, if you're listening in and you'd like to get into this conversation, we have a phone with a ringer on it that's ready for you to call. The number is 865-333-5937. That's in Knoxville, 333-5937. I'm sorry, go ahead.
What was that number again?
865-333-5937. Has a poetic
Oh, my gosh, I can't forget that.
Yeah.
It does. It does. So here's what the God test is, in case anyone was wondering what the hell we're talking about. We're talking about a very specific test that was engineered by a person named Rice Brook. He has a doctorate, but it's most likely from a ministering place.
Mm-hmm.
And as a person with a doctorate, I don't really take that seriously. But congratulations to him and his ministry degree. But he's been a minister for the last 30 years. He's served in over 60 different nations. And what he developed was a means of approaching people in sort of like a street epistemological way, but in terms of getting people to come back to religious mindsets rather than staying or enhancing their secular values. The God test is, like I said, a series of 10 questions that are meant to try to break down or at least give people a premise of trying to understand why they don't believe in God. And if they can't justify that, try to get them to be more persuaded to believe in God again. Why don't we go through the actual test questions? I think we've been doing this drum roll long enough.
Sure. Sounds good to me. I'm ready.
All right. So, question number one. We're going to pretend, I want you to come back into the past with me, okay? You to come back into the past. We got the whirly-dirly sounds. We got the sound effects. We're going back to Georgia Tech campus. Circa, what is this, 2008? Oh, man, I feel old now. 2008, 2009.
Old.
Ah, I know. So we're here.
I was born in 1950, you whippersnapper.
Oh, geez. All right. So it is a brilliant hot day on the summer campus of Georgia Tech. You got kids walking down with their backpacks. They're listening to Walkmans or whatever kids did back then.
Uh-huh.
And you walk up to this booth. I'm standing there with this booth. I got this book called The God Delusion. I think you may have seen it even before. But you've got all the information you have now from all your hundreds and thousands of years of being alive.
Uh-huh.
And you finally come up to me and you're like, hey, what's this about? And I say, hey, with God test, do you mind if you want to take it? It's just 10 quick questions. You say, sure. I say the first question is, question number one, do you believe in God? Remember, before we begin, most of these questions tend to be trick questions in some way, and we can go over why. But third question number one, do you believe in God?
Well, I can't think of any of the gods that I believe in at this point. No, I don't.
Okay, cool. In the first question, the way how I would think of it as kind of a trick question is that it assumes that there is a God to believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You may want to even clarify which God specifically referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the way how you answered it because you were in the, I guess, elevated mindset that you were aware of many different kinds of God claims.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I always would encourage someone who is answering a question like that, hey, don't you believe in God? Make the point that if you don't, that there's a lot of people who believe in different kinds of gods and
mm-hmm.
different kinds of God claims.
Right.
And you should try to, like, hammer down your perspective on the subject by not giving the person credence that you're automatically assuming their God whenever they say God.
Right.
It can go a long way.
Yeah.
So, number one, I would say, which God are you talking about? And
mm-hmm.
if they define it as, well, the God of Jesus Christ, and he was brought down, and his Father loves us, and he has a mother, and blah, 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 you can say, no, I don't believe in that God. You can be honest, because
sure.
there's other questions to the test.
Uh-huh.
All right. Let's do question number two. You did a good, I'm not sweating yet. So what are your, so there's already a set of questions for this.
Uh-huh.
What are your main reasons that you don't believe in God?
Well, there are several. We've already established which God, so we can't rely on a holy book because there are 10,000 holy books all over the world. I'd say that the stories and the evidence that I've been presented and for any particular God did not justify belief.
Does not justify belief.
Right.
You know, generally, that's a good. I like that answer too.
Mm-hmm.
That would probably be the exact answer I would use. Basically, there's just a lack of evidence.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people would go into the position of trying to discount God by referring to very specific texts in the Bible.
Right.
Or maybe saying, well, I don't believe God can do X, Y, Z in the Bible, like make it rain or whatever. When you start to play into the particular narrative
sure.
of a very specific religion,
uh-huh.
it's like playing magic with a person who is already a magic master. They can break the rules. They're playing with something that's basically make-believe.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play into that game.
Right.
Stick to your rules. And the reason why you don't believe is because there's just not enough evidence.
Right.
And if there is enough evidence, you'll be willing to believe.
Right.
So that's the one crux that you'd be willing to change your mind on.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a good thing to focus on.
Mm-hmm.
We're doing good so far,
right?
But I'm not wiggling.
Yeah.
So, believe it or not, questions one and two are already assuming that you're going to say those two things.
Well, I assume all of that. I mean, it's generally a script. It's all laid out.
Basically, yeah. This is how you break down atheists, after
mm-hmm.
all.
Right.
So, third question. Do you find any ultimate purpose or meaning in the universe?
Ultimate purpose? No.
What do you mean by that? Can you explain?
Well, I mean, you can have multiple purposes in your life. You can have, when you're young, you could have a purpose of getting good grades and growing up good and strong and having a healthy mental condition. As you get older, your purpose can be to find a mate and raise a family and make sure that they're well cared for. There's all kinds of purposes. Even when you have something like that, you can still have multiple other purposes, like trying to master a musical instrument or read a complete author, continue your education even after school, to better yourself and better your ability to deal with the world. There's all kinds of purposes you can give yourself. And why would anybody want to abandon that responsibility to make your purpose for yourself and turn it over to some church? because they say they know what God wants you to do. I mean, God himself never shows up and says and tells you what you want, what he wants you to do. They're just old books that people, humans, point to and say, this is the word of God. And, you know, they make conflicting statements and claims, so they can't all be right, but they can't all be wrong, especially when they go against the laws of nature.
We're going to actually talk about the laws of nature.
Cool.
In the next question. It's okay. Actually the next question. But let's talk about your response to the number three. So you just listed, you know, a lot of people can find a purpose for themselves.
They should.
How is that different from an ultimate purpose, though? Couldn't someone argue that that is what your ultimate purpose is?
Well, first, they have to demonstrate that there is one. Now, I'm not saying there isn't one. I just don't know of an ultimate purpose. Now, there are a lot of people who claim that there is one, but again, the evidence that they put forward for that claim does not satisfy my need for evidence to believe that claim. And the time to believe claims is when the evidence is presented.
What does that go for meaning in the universe? Do you find any meaning in the universe? Do you know what I mean by that?
You're talking about ultimate meaning or ultimate purpose. And I don't find that, no. But it's not necessary. There's plenty. There's sufficient purpose in the universe because we can supply as much of it as we want.
But the question is phrased, ultimate purpose or meaning in the universe. I'm trying to be vague in the sense of this is what it really appeals to. There are people out there who may feel like there's a sense of some sort of reason why they get up in the morning, some sort of inspirational thing that makes them want to do something good for someone. When they do something good for someone, they feel good themselves.
Right.
They can claim it to just being chemistry and biochemistry and stuff like that, but maybe there's something more fulfilling beyond that. Maybe there's something more important to them than just getting dopamine or just having sex or just finding people to hang out with. And it may be an intangible word to describe, but there is that sense of feeling that particularly young adults have. And I think that's what this question is appealing to.
Well, I mean, you can do all of that. You can do all of that. And if you do all of that, then you create a flourishing society, which is a goal in itself. But that's a human goal. Now, if you want to get right down to the universe, you know, rocks and wind and lightning doesn't have a purpose except for, you know, to be caused by external forces. But life itself, you know, if you get right down to it, about the only thing you can say about life is it chooses generally to reproduce. If it didn't, it wouldn't be around. And the thing about it is, even the smallest amoeba does that. Do you want to share your ultimate purpose with an amoeba? We can do better than that, and we have done better than that. We create our own purpose, and we've created many and myriad purposes that are worthy of the name.
I like that. If I were trying to answer this, it would be very much along those same lines. It would be something in the line in a concise sense of I don't believe in an ultimate purpose, but I do believe humans can make their
own purpose
for themselves.
And can you think of anything more important to do?
Exactly, right?
Right.
And I also don't believe in like an ultimate meaning of the universe. I do believe that people can find meaning in their own way. They can interpret things to be meaningful to them. But whether or not there's like an objective, like, how do I put it? If everyone valued a particular rock on the earth, but then everyone was wiped off the face of the earth the next day, I think that meaning also goes along with it. Like meaning needs people to appreciate it for it to exist in that capacity. Like if no one can have meaning on a particular rock that's floating somewhere on Saturn, it's irrelevant, because no one's able to prescribe meaning to it. Meaning is necessary. By necessity, needs people to have a sense of meaning in it. It's probably more confusing as well. Anyway, I'm just saying I can find my own meaning. I can find my own purpose in life. I don't think there's an objective, ultimate purpose or meaning that I'm trying to get to. I think the one that I give it is just good enough. So do I think there's an ultimate purpose and an ultimate meaning? No. And do I think there's a meaning in the universe? No. But I do think that I can find meaning in the universe myself.
And create meaning.
Yeah, exactly. And I think being able to do that is one of the coolest things that we can do as a
community. I agree.
And one of the best things that we can do as a society, because that is one of the worthwhile things to do in life in general.
Right.
But you had mentioned laws of nature several times. I'll say once, at least. Once, we can check the pace in your questions, and that's question number four, actually. So you had already said you didn't believe in God. Mm-hmm. You already said that the reason why you didn't believe in God was because of lack of evidence, and that you didn't find any ultimate purpose or ultimate meaning in the universe.
Yeah.
So then here's my question number four. And this is the one more designed to stump not the emotional side of, I guess, potential atheists, but to get to more of the – so last question was, like, more emotional. This one's slightly more technical, and it's just about how do you account for the laws of nature? And that's question number four. How do you account for the laws of nature? Mm-hmm. I'm putting you on the stand now. You have to demonstrate how you
– I have two answers to that.
All right.
The first one is it does not matter how I account for it. I just say I don't know. It doesn't matter. And the reason I say it that way is Christianity makes an awful lot of claims about how the universe came into existence, about how God created all the laws of the universe and nature and created people and land and rain and all this other good stuff. Christianity makes these claims as well as all the other religions out there. Put no evidence forward to substantiate these claims, and then expects everybody to buy into them. They have to substantiate their own claims no matter what anybody else says. They make the claims, they've got to come up and stand up and show us evidence for those claims. They have to give us reasons why we need to believe them no matter what else anybody else says. I mean, I can just sit there and say, I don't know. And my answer is truthful and honest and complete. Now, I can give physical studies, the results of physical studies, and I could be a physicist and know all of the ins and outs of quantum mechanics and all that and give a good answer, but that doesn't help their case at all. Even if I said fairies did it, it doesn't help their case at all. They can laugh at my answer, and I can turn around and laugh at their answer, because theirs is no more substantiated than mine.
But if you say you don't know, doesn't that mean that someone could know and you should be listening to them?
I do listen to them. I've listened to them growing up. I grew up as a Christian. The answers they give are not worthy of consideration. A magic man in the sky snapped his fingers and everything came into existence. That's a better explanation than physicists give? I don't think so. And physicists aren't demanding that I give them 10% of my money and have sex in a particular position.
So what was your other answer?
The other answer was, I think I think the laws of nature, I can give the physics answer. I believe that they came into existence in the first seconds of after the Big Bang when atoms were consolidating about the same time that atoms were consolidating from subatom particles in the first few seconds, in the Planck time, as it were, to when the universe was created. Now, that's an answer, but they're going to point to it and say, you really think, the universe came from nothing? It doesn't matter what I think. Their claims have to stand on their own. They can't point to other people's claims and say, those are silly, and then assume that because the others are silly, that it gives more credence to their claims. It doesn't.
So I actually have a kind of a side point. There is a guy who goes to the Knoxville atheist meetups. He plays the board games, and he comes to the regular weekly meetup, at least when I was there.
Yeah.
His name's Matt. He has a wonderful girlfriend. They are a great couple. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting is he is a particle physicist. And what's great is you can have a conversation about him with video games where you just ask, what's the highest score in Donkey Kong ever? And he's like, 47,000. It's like, how do I get the princess in Super Mario Brothers? Like, well, you got to jump underneath Bowser and then hit the hammer, and then he falls in the lava. Uh-huh. Then you're like, how long did it take atoms to condensate into reality after the Planck time? And he's like, well, actually, it's about 300,000 years from this time. Mm-hmm. But the issue is time is based on observable consequences, so it's actually a nebulous point of view.
Uh-huh.
And then you'll be like, okay, so back to Donkey Kong. And you can go back to the video game.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we could ever get on the show, it'd be great. But if you ever want to, the information that we have with regard to what happened immediately after the Big Bang, mm-hmm. is to a degree nebulous, but incredibly detailed, more so than I could do justice, or I think for the most part, either of us could do justice. Mm-hmm. So I think what I would encourage people to do is look this up because we have the information, but just because we can't explain it well over the phone or the radio team.
Or even if you don't know, even if you don't understand it, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Christianity.
Even if you don't know it, even if you explain it.
Religious claims.
Doesn't mean that religion automatically gets to come in and be like, well, we have a response.
That's
just as valid as everybody else.
That's a false dichotomy. They're saying that, you know, we have this position, you have that position, you have not proved your position, so our position is true. No, that's a false dichotomy. There are thousands of positions out there, and one of them is, I don't know. And another position is it's unknowable.
Right.
Nobody can know.
Well, it could be unknowable. We're getting pretty close to knowing it. But the thing is, my position is I will side to the position that has the best evidence behind it.
Right.
And the interesting thing is the physics models that are presented are the same. The models that describe the events after the Big Bang are the exact same models that are used to power your car when you hit the gasoline pedal.
Yeah.
It's the same models when you walk up the stairs and you don't slip off one stair because you know there's friction between your foot and the step of the stair that you're walking up. It's the same physics model that occurs when you flip a light switch and all of a sudden your room gets brighter.
Right.
It's all the same model. There's not a model that works for lights and then a model that works for cars and a model that works for stairs.
Mm-hmm.
It's all one consistent model that's used to explain a whole array of observable consequences on Earth, including things that have happened even before human beings have been into the picture. And I think that's why we have so much confidence in that as an explanative method to describe events that happen in reality compared to what churches can offer, which is just God did it.
Mm-hmm. Right. God
did it.
We're pretty. Yeah, one thing I was going to say was that mathematics supports all of these physical models. In other words, if you go to college and you talk about, you know, gravity and electromagnetic force and the weak and the strong force and all the stuff, they have mathematics that build a model to support what their conjectures are. And they can test those and they come back true. They come back with true results. There is no symbol in mathematics for God. He doesn't exist in mathematics, so there's no place in there for him. Because if he's a supernatural being, he cannot interact with physical realm.
Right.
You know, theoretically, that's a position that you can take anyway.
There are theologians that can make the argument that they can mathematically prove that God exists by using certain variables that are found in the Bible. But the thing is, there is no God variable. You can't solve to God because there's no mathematical demonstration for God's existence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's an insane variable. Anyway, bottom of the hour.
It is. And we're going to take a break. We'll be back probably in about 4 minutes. We've got a song here that's called We Don't Go to God's House Anymore. And I hope you enjoy it. We'll be back in about 4. See you then.
Are you going to a dance?
No, Mom, it's just a movie day.
Oh. Your father and I have no objections to church or school-sponsored dances, but we surely don't want you going to any of those local places like that cuckoo club.
Everything will be all right. Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Sorry to end that music so quickly. It just kind of dropped off there. But we are back and we're ready to talk. Are you still with me there, Wombat?
I'm here and I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Wombat's ready to go.
All right. Never a lack of enthusiasm on that side. Okay. I need to talk about Free Thought organizations, the atheist organizations here in Knoxville real quick. We'll try to cover them here shortly. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. November marks our 15th year. ASK now has over 750 members, and you can find them online at knoxvilleatheist.org, or you can go directly to meetup.com, and look for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join us in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall, where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Dillahunty. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville, the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday mornings in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. Or just follow the signs once you get on campus. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. That's the Secular Student Alliance. Do a Google on that. And finally, there's a newcomer to the free thought groups, which is Freedom from Religion Foundation, East Tennessee chapter, which is a local chapter of those nice people who live up in Madison, Wisconsin, and cherishly guard our separation from church and state, the wall that we have erected there that needs constant repair, and they are there to help do it. If you know of an infraction in the church-state wall, in a chink in the armor, as it were, get a hold of Freedom from Religion Foundation or find the local chapter. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk a little more about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's called Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday pretty much between 5 and 6 o'clock on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. You don't have cable, you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archives of some of the shows on YouTube, where a fan has been posting them. Just search for three words, Knoxville Free Thought Forum. And if you're interested in getting involved with the TV show or this radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And that wraps up the announcements. So where did we leave off on this God test?
So the last question.
Uh-huh.
We got to go back to the past real quick. Hold on a second.
Okay.
Fast to the past, down the fast. Okay, here we are.
We need a harp music or something.
Your five.
Or echo.
Circa 2008, mm-hmm. Summer, Georgia Tech campus, first day of classes. All the kids are about, no one knows where to walk. So all the alleyways and sidewalks are crowded with freshmen. And there's booths lined everywhere, up and down, colorfuls. We got sororities, we got fraternities. But we got this one booth that we're hanging around that's called the God Test. And when you go up to the booth, the people there ask you a set of 10 questions designed to break down your dirty secular ways and get you back on the right track, which is the God track.
Say it ain't
Can
so.
Can you get through these 10 questions? We're going through the gauntlet today. We went through the last question, which was, how do you account for the laws of nature? And I just wanted to make one extra point before we went to a break. The laws of nature are not prescriptive, they're descriptive. And what I mean by that is a law is what a scientist has observed to such a degree that they're very confident in that observation constantly happening for the most part. For example, we have a law of gravity, for example, which basically describes how bodies of mass interact with each other. But we're so confident with that we basically have said this is a law because we observe it. It's not a law because an ultimate being decided to program the universe in that respect. It's a law because scientists had observed it and decided this is a very trustworthy statement or claim to believe that bodies of mass will always act in this way, and we'll refer to that as gravity. The thing is, laws have been wrong before, and that's why it's so important to understand that laws are descriptive and not prescriptive.
Uh-huh.
For example, we used to have a law that, you know, the Earth was the center of the entire universe. That was called the geocentric theory.
Mm-hmm.
That turned out to be wrong. It was a law that scientists produced, but it was wrong. And the great thing about science is it can self-correct itself. It can get better. It's willing to adapt with new information that's given to it. And as a result, we get a more accurate view of how our universe works. And in that view, we're not the center of the universe anymore. It may not make anyone happy, but it gets a much more accurate idea. And it's a demonstration showing that laws are not a prescription given to by a god. They're a description observed by scientists.
Right. True.
So there are laws of nature. They're just things that scientists see in nature. And how do we account for them? It's because scientists have observed them for the most part.
Yeah.
But they're not evidence of God existing. So, number five.
Even if it was, let's go back to that just for a second. Even if it was evidence for a God, you still have to come up which God. Most believers will say, you know, well, that's evidence for a God, and then jump to this huge conclusion, you know, way over there that God is their God, and that it was Jesus was his son, and all this stuff, when they haven't bothered to even draw the line, much less fill it in. That God that they're talking about is a generic God, could be a deist God. He could have died in the Big Bang. He could have started the universe and just went on to something else, didn't like it anymore, gave up on it, doesn't want to talk to us. Any kind of God. It could be God of the 16 galaxy over, you know, from here. Their God. It could be theirs. Gods that we don't know about. And that God may or may not care about us at all. And it doesn't even speak to the chance that there's a soul or not, or an afterlife, or a place for souls to go. There's a thousand questions that still need to be answered, but they just assume a ball and say that this one proof of God is one, true, and two, our God, when there's nothing, nothing there. I'm sorry.
I like to think of it as the universe is either made by humans or not made by humans. And if it's not made by humans, you don't get to pick from that set of things that are not humans what made the universe. You can't just pick this one idea or concept of this is God.
Right. Especially something that's never been proven to exist.
Right, because then it's a question of, well, how do you rule out the tape dispenser that I have? How do you rule out pixies that are in some guy's mind? How do you rule out interdimensional aliens?
Right.
How do you rule out magic? How do you rule out all this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
In the set of things that are not humans, how'd you figure it out? And I'm not saying that it's humans that made the universe. I'm just saying you don't get to pick from the set of things that are not humans without some evidence.
Right.
And that's all we're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to question number five.
Okay.
So question number three was meaning of the universe. You shut that down. But that was more of like an emotional thing. This was more, question four was about technical. Mm-hmm. How do you account for the laws of nature?
Yeah.
Number five is meant to scare you now. This is, mm-hmm. now we're getting to the crux of the matter.
Yeah.
We're going towards home plate.
Mm-hmm.
Does evil exist? Question number five. I'm crossing my hands now because now you're beginning to make me a little upset. I'm now down to question number five.
Well,
does evil exist?
We just had a shooting. I'm sure that represents evil on some scale. When you harm another human being, and especially for no good reason, like self-preservation or war or something like that, then we would label that evil. But is there an objective evil? Is there an evil that exists outside of the human heart? You know, how could it? You know, we don't have any idea of any intelligence at all that doesn't have a physical base. Like, our intelligence is based in our brain, our brain produces our intelligence. You know, a computer may have housed some artificial intelligence, but it resides on hardware. In this universe, it's hardware. It's physical. We have no evidence, no matter how many Christians or Islamists or you know, any religion out there who claims to know where your soul goes to the afterlife, there have never been any evidence for the existence of a soul, nor any place for them to go after we die.
I heard your spiel about souls. We know how you feel about souls. You don't like souls.
I don't, why would I, I don't like souls anymore and I don't like God. I mean, what's not to like if you don't exist? Yeah.
Doubter five.
Yeah.
Let's focus on evil though. What is evil? Like, if you're telling me evil doesn't exist, what are you even talking about? What is evil?
I would define evil as doing cruelty to your fellow man intentionally. You know, that's evil. But, I mean, you can do cruelty financially, physically, emotionally, mentally. There's all kinds of evil that a person can foist on another human being, and we call that bad. That's not a good thing. But to say that there's some kind of supernatural evil, no, it's never been demonstrated.
Dude, I like that answer, because basically evil is just a man-made construct.
Right.
Or it's a thing that humans invented that's a label that we use to describe things that are harmful, you know, things that particularly unnecessarily harmful. Mm-hmm. Like we had, for example, you know, a hurricane that went through and devastated a lot of U.S. territories, including Puerto Rico, including our mainland areas as well, but nowhere near as bad as like certain islands that like just got completely devastated. Even the island that my mom was from, St. Thomas, had a lot of damage to it. I don't know how many people would call that evil, though, but it's definitely something that caused a lot of harm. It's something that's terrible. But the shooting that occurred in Las Vegas, I don't think there's any unquestionable idea that that's something that people would call evil. So maybe what they mean more by it is that that's clearly an example of unnecessary harm that occurred to people.
Intentional harm. Yeah.
Intentional harm, calculated harm.
Right.
There's definitely, between these two things, a natural event coming and just passing through and hurting a lot of people. That's harmful, it's dangerous, and it's terrible. But you have this other event where there's some guy shooting other people, calculating it. You know, we can sit at the table and argue back and forth on which one's more evil, but we both have an understanding that we're calling it evil. We're not falling onto a definition.
We're choosing terms. We're choosing terms to use, to employ. Yeah,
it could be subjective entirely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, we do have those concepts of evil as a label. So then let me ask you this, question number six. What is the basis of your morality?
Well, we base our society is on our actions. If we have basically a societal contract with each other, if I do no harm to you, I expect you to do no harm to me. And if we can do that on a steady basis going forward, we can build civilizations. We can build societies. If we don't do that, then we usually find the individual who is breaking that contract, and we either put them away or some otherwise isolate them from our society. But it's a tool of society. Our morality is something that we agree on. And you can demonstrate that by going to different societies all over the world where they have different moralities. It's something that we agree upon. Not only that, but let's go to what Christians would say. We get our morality from the Bible. Well, if you did, then we'd still be stoning homosexuals. We'd still be holding people as slaves. We'd still be killing women who are not virgins on their wedding night. You know, we don't get all of our morals from the Bible. The Bible got their morals from how people act. And when they acted the way they acted back 2,000 years ago, and that's why they're enshrined in the Bible that way. They're 2,000-year-old morals. We can't live that way anymore.
Right. I like to think that my morality is, as weird as this may sound, based on evolution, because my morality is basically a behavior set that gives me an advantage that lets me have a survival benefit, basically. Mm-hmm. The way how I treat people ensures that other people will treat me well and that I'll be able to continue living on and maybe even reproduce one day. And if my kids have that same set of beliefs or moral principles, they'll continue to do the same as well. if I didn't have those beliefs set, if I wanted to act crazy or evilly or hurt people, you know, I wouldn't be able to pass my principles head on. And as a result, culturally, we've all prescribed ourselves to, or we've all decided to follow or prescribe ourselves this set of rules to live by. And as a result, we're a healthier society because of it. Because if we chose the opposite, we'd fall apart and we wouldn't be able to move on anymore. We'd kill ourselves off, basically.
Right. Right.
Huh. Okay. So we're going down to the home stretch now. We got 10 minutes on the clock. I got four more questions left. This will, in fact, turn you into a believer. Are you ready to fall into God? We're about to go into question number seven.
Sure.
Then question number seven. Do you think human life is special compared to animal or plant life?
It's special in that it's much more intelligent. That was our survival trait, our intelligence. We have bigger brains. We able to figure out things better. It's also one of the reasons why we're so superstitious. We use these big brains to analyze what's going on around us. And, you know, for centuries we thought we saw agency where there wasn't agency. In other words, if we heard a bush rustle over there, it could either be the wind or it could be a lion. And a lion has agency. In other words, intentions and intelligence. But so a lot of times we'll put agency where things don't really belong, like in the clouds, in the sky, you know, in our imagination, sometimes it's our own worst enemy. But I think just because we have a huge step up in intelligence from the nearest animal down the chain, and that's one thing that's made us so successful as a species.
Right. I would say there's definitely a technological advantage that humans have done.
Yeah,
though you get yourself into a weird truth. But you get yourself in a weird position where societies that aren't as technologically advanced, like some sort of Amazonian tribe that just got discovered today, they don't have smartphones. Are they still humans? Yes. Well, they're not technologically advanced, so what's the deal? So I always try to say for questions like these, you know, I don't see like when you say special, you might want to define what you mean by special. Like, are you saying we're more valuable? Mm-hmm. Are you saying we're smarter, faster, better in some sort of context?
Mm-hmm.
Define that, and I will be happy to explain. Because as far as having the biggest brain, we don't have the biggest brain. As far as having the most complex genetic makeup, we don't. Plants have way more complex genes than we do.
Uh-huh.
I can get into that later if we had more time. But for the most part, like, if you're trying to say, well, humans can ascribe agency on certain things, but bats can't. I don't know what a bat thinks. Maybe they're just as paranoid as we are.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So at a certain point, the question falls onto them because they can sneak in little words and then use that as a means to push you towards their agenda.
Sure.
I would say, what do you mean by special?
Right.
And by if it's in a context that we can measure, mm-hmm. then I can give you a fair assessment. But if not,
right.
you know, I can still fall back and I don't know. I can still say, I don't know if we're special. I don't know what animals think.
Yeah.
I don't know if plants have thoughts themselves. But for the most part, as a human being, it's kind of nice.
And having
we can be nice to each other.
Yeah, and having been a Christian, I know what their answer is, that, you know, there's a divine spark in us. Well, that's just another claim that they put forward without evidence. They never substantiate that claim. It's just something they say. It's a concept they throw at you without foundation.
Right.
Okay, what's your next perk?
All right, next question. I love this one. This is the best question of the whole set.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this is the high point. Question number eight. How certain are you that God does not exist? And let's just assume we're talking about the Christian God.
Well, I'm pretty certain. I mean, it's mutually contradictory. I mean, he... what's his name? Took care of
but
that a long time ago.
It's not a question of belief. It's not a question of knowledge. It's a question of certainty.
On Dawkins scale, you know, one you believe in and seven you don't. I'd say I'm a six and a half. But, you know, my mind could be changed, you know, with evidence.
You're so good. Yeah, so, again, I would have used the Dawkins scale if they wanted, like, some sort of, like, metric.
Uh-huh.
For some reason, I don't like how it goes from one to seven. I find that
should
a
be
bit
10,
of arbitrary.
Yeah.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But if I were going to say, I'd be, like, I would say, how certain am I that God doesn't exist? If 100% was 100% confident that he did exist.
Yeah.
I would say like 5% sure that yeah. God, that's my confidence in that God, which gives me a 5% window that he might exist.
Sure.
My issue is I don't want to be 100% on either way, and mm-hmm. I think that's what this question is yeah. trying to set you up to do.
Yeah,
it's trying to make you say 100% that God doesn't mm-hmm. exist, which will fall into a how do you know that,
mm-hmm.
which will open up some doubt, and with yeah. that, doubt being open, there's momentum to draw you into faith.
Yeah, certainties are red herring.
Exactly. So mm-hmm. The 6 that you give out of 7,
mm-hmm.
that's a great answer, I think. Just be sure on your side, mm-hmm. But leave that door open because you are a
sure.
person that's open to change your mind.
Yeah, evidence.
If given evidence, which
right.
is your position.
Yep.
All right. Here's our last question, number 9. I think we can drive this home because
okay.
the last question is, may I pray for you?
Is that really? Is that it?
Yeah, it is. It is. But
well.
We're going to do number 9, which is, have you explored what the Bible says about these questions? No, it doesn't say the Quran. It doesn't say
right.
the Bhagavad Gita.
Mm-hmm.
It
right.
says the Bible.
Yeah.
Have you explored what the Bible says about these questions? About,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
does God exist as
mm-hmm.
you're more special than animals or plants? The basis of your morality,
mm-hmm.
does evil exist, etc.
Well, right. The
have
thing, this is again, is where they try to catch young people, people who haven't read the Bible, don't know anything about it, and then they go, no, I don't know, you know. Well, you better read it. And actually, here is where I agree with them. They should read it. This is an atheist telling you, read your Bible. You will not come away
yes.
from it the same person. So
oh,
many
absolutely.
People just look at it and say, well, this is the good book. But there's so much hate and so much killing and so much just raw, God, I can't think of the word, just rancor in it. God is, I mean, Yahweh is the old Jewish war god, and he shows it. The one thing that God does with humans more than anything else is kill them. You know,
yep.
he gives them plagues, he throws fire and brimstone at them, He
forces sexual,
right.
you know, contact
just,
on them.
Just, I mean,
yeah.
show me examples in the Bible where he actually shows his love to humans. And I'll show you, for each one of those, I'll show you 20 where he is killing people and wiping out entire cities or well, drowning the entire planet. You know, that type of
right.
thing. So,
I
yeah,
I,
you know, he's just...
A really good
like,
example.
No, he's not. Go ahead.
Oh, I would say a good example is in the Bible. It does say God has a plan for everyone, and we know that there's such a thing as sexual abuse of children. Like, you know,
what was that last? There's such a thing as what?
Sexual abuse of children.
Oh yeah,
you know,
yeah.
like
mm-hmm.
child rape.
Uh-huh.
For this is how I know that God has no moral scruples in the sense of if I have the power to stop a child from being sexually assaulted,
mm-hmm.
I would stop the child
right.
from being sexually assaulted.
Right.
But God would let that child be assaulted and say, hey, I'm going to let you finish, you know, the
doing
rape
that
you're doing to
mm-hmm.
that kid.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're done, oh, I'm going to punish you really,
yeah.
really, really
yeah.
bad,
mm-hmm.
unless if you say you're sorry, and then I'll let it go.
Right.
I can't conceive of a more horrendous thing to do than
right.
that. And so when I read the Bible, I'm seeing it from a perspective, not as a person who already believes or a person searching for belief, but as a person who's critically trying to assess,
right.
is this the mindset of an all-powerful, all-good, all-being?
That's what's important. Now, we got 2 minutes left. Go ahead and say something quick, and I'll say something quick, and we'll have to get off because we got another DJ sitting here waiting to go on the air.
The last question is, may I pray for you? And, of course, you could say, hey, I can't stop you,
yeah,
and you can let them
right.
do what they want to. But
yeah.
for the most part, that's how you defeat the God test. And I think we did a great job.
Yeah.
Remember the questions that we had? Have a good time.
Uh-huh.
And feel free to question anything that we said or
that's
anything
right.
that you believe right now.
Mm-hmm.
You might just learn something new, and that's always a good thing.
That's right. And if you want to get a hold of us, you can write me at doubter5@digitalfreethought.com. You can write the show at digitalfreethought@gmail.com. And don't forget to go to the blog and read the articles for yourself and make up your minds or not at digitalfreethought.com/blog. And remember, signing off, this is Doubter 5 and Wombat. Bye, Wombat.
Wombat says bye.
Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't sweat it. See you next week, 7 o'clock, this same channel. Bye.
Bye.
listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.